Pistons trying to dig it out. They're down three. Inbound pass to Lampier on top by Isaiah. Three-pointer.
We got one.
1-14. Isaiah.
We got next. This is Free Association with Dave Zarum and J.D. Bunkus.
Welcome to Free Association. This is Sportsnet's weekly Raptors and NBA podcast. I'm Dave Zarum. He's J.D. Bunkus. J.D., you good?
I'm very good. Very excited. Very ready to talk to a couple of really cool guests today. Isaiah Thomas and Tyler Ennis on the pod.
Well, there you go. You spoiled the big surprise. But yeah, we have huge guests on the pod today. A huge episode for you. And frankly, last night, Monday night, was a huge game for the Raptors and the T-Wolves, at least by preseason standards, and at least if you're Kyle Lowry, who dropped 40 points on those guys.
So safe to say that the whole, like, me being afraid of Kyle Lowry's weight loss affecting him in a negative way thing is just dead and gone. That's over.
Listen, here's his stats in the preseason. He's averaging 30 points per game in 25 minutes on 70% shooting. So personally, I think that's a realistic expectation for this season.
I'm pretty sure, too.
It's pretty much in line with what we can expect from Mr. Lowry. Yeah, I know. He's been lights out. It's been cool to see.
We're going to hear a lot of Matt Devlin, Lowry, vote Kyle Lowry for MVP stuff, or vote Kyle Lowry All-Star Game stuff, it seems to me. He just looks quick. Like, he just looks good. Like,
he looks totally in control. He was schooling guys on Monday night. Andrew Wiggins from Minnesota, he looked great as well. Like, super impressive.
They mentioned it during the broadcast, but it looks like he really has dedicated himself to that three-point shot in the offseason. He just gets so high. He elevates so high on that three-point shot. Hard to block, and we said before, that's a big key for him this season. But the guy who really stood out to me was Towns.
Yeah.
Towns looks good. Like, he's ahead of even where I thought he was. Like, he was kind of, all the draft guys kind of went over this, but in Kentucky, he was a guy that ended up having to share a lot of the offensive focus. And he kind of got, I think he got labeled more by casual fans as a defensive guy. And it's like, no, that guy can just straight up ball. Like, he is going to be very good.
He's a good passer. He's got, I didn't realize the range on his shot. Like, he's hitting those super long twos.
I knew he was working on it
soon enough.
I knew he was working on it, but I didn't know it was like already that accurate.
But hey, when he takes it to the basket, he's got to make sure Bruno Caboclo is nowhere near.
Yeah, that's right.
Huge block from our guy Bruno.
Bruno, what do they call him on the broadcast? The claw. He had that. He stole that. He stole that pass and threw one down, and then on the other end, he gets the block. Albeit, he started the turnover, but he still got that block.
But listen, JD, here we are. You know, we're 2 weeks away from the start of the NBA season.
Oh.
So you know what that means?
Yeah, it means I'm really stoked.
And it also means that it's preview season around these parts.
It is.
Here on the Good Ship Free Association.
When you say around these parts, it makes me want to talk like Cowboy.
Just go for it, man. I won't hold you back.
That just makes me want to do that. Like, I want to be a couple gunslingers out in the Old West just throwing up predictions right now today.
Well, today we're going to be sharp shooting our way around the Eastern Conference.
So partner.
We're going to be tackling it division by division, even though, you know, divisions have never been less relevant than right now, but you know, it's good to see that we're quick on change and progress here at Free Association. But we're going to look through each division. We're going to do it with the guests you mentioned. I mean, Tyler Ennis, Milwaukee Bucks point guard.
Central's going to be good this year.
Pride of Brampton. The Central is going to be really good this year. We're also going to have Zeke, Isaiah Thomas, calling into the show momentarily. So that's going to be amazing. I'm really excited for that. Get his thoughts on the upcoming season. Of course, we will talk some Raptors with Isaiah Thomas. Remember to subscribe to Free Association on iTunes if you haven't already. Leave a comment while you're at it. Why not? What else are you doing right now?
Let's get the show started, partner.
Okay. Well, let's start it off in the Central Division with our guest, our first guest, Tyler Ennis. And JD, no John Wayne, all right? Just do it in your own voice.
Aw, sure.
This is Damari Carroll of the Toronto Raptors.
All right, you're listening to Free Association. Thrilled right now to have on the phone Milwaukee Bucks point guard, Brampton's own Tyler Ennis. Tyler, how you doing, man?
Hey, what's up, man? How you guys doing?
Good, good. Hey, man. I guess first things first, we got to ask you, like, how's the labrum? And before the injury, did you know it was a labrum?
No, actually, before the injury, I didn't know what it really was. I basically had it for a while, and then after the MRI, they kind of, you know, pinpointed what it was. And then, you know, it's doing well now. basically kind of getting back in practice, easing my way into it, and you know, just trying to get stronger. So, you know, when November rolls around, I'll be able to play and have no worries about it.
Yeah, I'm wondering about that, though. Like, how do you feel like you are in your progression right now? You feel like you're on track, or you're ahead of schedule?
I think I'm on track. You know, we're looking at November to come back, and you know, I'm doing, you know, doing some stuff where, you know, I'm able to test it and see, you know, how I feel doing it, you know, before I go back into 5-on-5 and, you know, playing for real. So, you know, just basically, you know, doing things that, you know, I'm going to have to do in a game, and seeing how I feel the next morning, and, you know, figuring out what, you know, helps and what, you know, makes, you know, it easier for me to come back.
Mm-hmm. So listen, when you get back, I mean, obviously you've been watching the guys practice when you haven't been able to. You know, one of the cool things about your team in Milwaukee is that you guys are returning basically more or less the same roster that got you guys into the playoffs last year. But one huge addition has been Greg Monroe. I mean, just in practice, from what you're seeing in early preseason so far, what kind of difference is this guy making on the court for you guys?
Yeah, it gives us, you know, Greg gives us a low post score that, you know, we really didn't have last year.
Yeah.
We had, you know, some really good bigs that, you know, could do different things, you know, spot up, shoot and things like that. But we didn't really have anybody we could just throw it down there and you know, tell him to score. So, you know, the big thing I noticed about Greg is, you know, how focal he is defensively, but also, you know, how much he passes out of the post. So, you know, when you have a guy that, you know, basically scores whenever he wants out there, but also finds open guys, you know, it's something, you know, that not every team has.
That I'm guessing that he's a guy that really does stand out of camp, because, like you said, you guys did struggle for some interior scoring last year. But is there one guy that, you know, as you're kind of observing, that some people might be sleeping on when it comes to this team?
You can't choose yourself.
Yeah, not you.
I don't think I'd choose myself anyway. But I probably should still say him. Probably say Greg, just because he's a new guy, and something that we didn't have, and he gives us a different dimension this year.
So listen, looking back at last season real quick, I mean, I think everyone's rookie years comes with kind of the good and the bad. And, you know, you started the season in Phoenix on a team with a pretty crowded backcourt, and it meant you saw some time in the D League. But when you were down there, I mean, you killed it. I'm just looking for the numbers here. But yeah, anyways, like, super impressive showing in the D League. But it kind of showed that you were at a level above that league. Like, you were an NBA player. Was it frustrating being down there and playing so well? Or is that kind of a do you view that as a positive?
Yeah, I'd probably say, you know, I just kind of viewed it as a positive. I think at first, you know, something that I didn't want to do. And, you know, obviously I think everybody would be out there playing, you know, on the NBA floor rather than there. But, you know, at the time, you know, me and a couple of other young guys weren't playing. So, you know, we just took that opportunity to go and sharpen up our game and kind of just get back on the floor. And, you know, it's easy to, you know, work out and do different things and think you're in shape, but once you get in the game, you know, it's completely different. So we just looked at it as a, you know, a way to go down there and, you know, kind of sharpen our tools a bit and you know, just stay in shape. And we knew it wasn't going to be, you know, any extended time. So we knew we'd go down there for, you know, one or two games and come back. And we didn't have to miss any of the you know, our regular team games. But speaking of rookie, I think somebody I missed, you asked about somebody who's surprising me this year is the rookie Rashad Vaughn. You know, he's really shot the ball well.
Oh, that's right. From North Carolina, shooting guard, right?
No, he's from Minnesota. He went to UNLV last year.
Okay.
But, you know, he's I knew he was good, but, you know, I think he's surprising a lot of people the way he can score the ball for us.
Cool.
You know, you mentioned about being frustrated about not being in the NBA, or not really frustrated, but the fact that you want to play in the NBA. And of course, that's natural for a guy like you, a first round pick and a guy with good pedigree and who's kind of shown that he belongs at this level. And, you know, you move out of that crowded backcourt in Phoenix and you come to Milwaukee and you got to feel like you're a little bit confident, like, hey, a team targeted me. I'm over here now. I'm probably going to get to see some minutes. And then the offseason, the team goes and gets Gravis Vasquez. And he was a super popular teammate here in Toronto. And I'm sure as you've gotten to get to know him, I'm guessing you probably like him too. Really, really affable guy. But there had to be some level of frustration knowing that the team went out and got another guy that plays at your position this year, no?
No. I mean, you know, I think you're never going to have a team where, you know, you have the exact same guys back. I think that's, you know, on this level, it's, you know, I don't think there's ever been a team where you have, you know, all 15 guys and no changes. So, you know, I think it's, you know, a positive. I think we have a lot of guys who could, you know, make each other better in practice wise, but we have a lot of guys who play together, you know, in a real game. So, you know, I think it gives coach a couple options, you know, we have a lot of big guards where, you know, we could play, you know, 2 point guards at a time and not be small. And we have, mm-hmm. you know, just different things that coach could do. And coach is known for giving a lot of people chances to go out there and prove themselves. So, you know, that's not the way, you know, I don't think anybody on the team really looks at it that way.
Yeah, that's cool that you mentioned that, though, because I was actually going to ask you a follow-up about the 2 point guard lineups that you guys are going to employ this year, because it just seems to me like on paper, that's going to be something that happens a lot. And with Jason Kidd at the helm, probably something that's pretty popular with him.
Yeah. I mean, even last year we had a couple of times in the you know, the second half of the season where, you know, it'd be me and Jared Bayless, or me and Mike, or Mike and Bayless. So, you know, coach isn't afraid to play 2 point guards, and you know, I think with the height of, you know, the size of the point guards that we have, I think we're able to do that a bit more than other teams would.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously one of those tall point guards, Michael Carter Williams. You know, it's kind of wild to think about it that. And I'm sure a lot of Syracuse fans already, you know, make this connection, but it's crazy to think that on the same day last season, you and Carter Williams will be traded to the same team. Because, I mean, you guys have been really close for a while now, right? I mean, his rookie year in Philly, I think you guys were in touch all the time while you were in Syracuse. And correct me if I'm wrong, but he was at your draft table, is that right?
Not at the table.
At the party?
We had a little dinner the night before. So.
Okay.
Yeah, and he was there, and he was just telling me, you know, don't, you know, at this point, there was, you know, it was the night before the draft. He told me there's nothing you can really do, so just go out there and have fun. And that was, you know, pretty good advice for me, you know, coming from somebody who was a rookie of the year.
Totally.
And, and he, you know, I think we were pretty similar spots as far as not knowing, you know, where we're going to go and not really having an idea of what we're going to do. So, but, it was pretty big coincidence, you know. We missed playing with each other by a year, and then we end up on the same team, you know, my first year playing. So,
I mean, I'm sure part of you is kind of gunning for his spot. He's got the starting job, presumably. But at the same time, it's got to be cool having a friend around in that scene. Although it seems like it's a team where a lot of you guys get along. A lot of young guys, you know, in the same kind of similar position.
Yeah, exactly. I think we have a lot of guys. You know, we have a really young team, but, you know, we have a bunch of guys who, you know, enjoy, you know, being around each other and playing each other. So I think, you know, just being on a team like this and, you know, knowing that, you know, we have the potential to, you know, do what we did last year, you know, we're all just all working, you know, towards that and just having fun doing it.
I'm glad Dave brought up the trade deadline, because I think one of the coolest things for you when we were thinking about this interview was that one of the reasons Jason Kidd went to Milwaukee was because he wasn't happy with kind of his personnel decision-making when he was in New Jersey or Brooklyn now.
His role,
basically. So he wanted to have more of a hand in personnel decisions. And then so for, you know, a Hall of Fame point guard to target you and to bring you into an organization and know that he's going to be a coach that's kind of watching over you and looking over you and looking at your development had to be just a pretty big moment in your career. Like, this is a massive opportunity for you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't really look at it that. I looked at it more as, you know, opportunity for me to get on the floor. Mm-hmm. You know, opportunity for me to, you know, just kind of, you know, learn more, you know, on the experience side rather than, you know, watching. Because, you know, in Phoenix, basically, I was, you know, watching and learning a lot, you know, from the sideline. But, you know, I think the way coach incorporates everybody into playing and gives everyone the experience and holds everyone accountable, regardless of, you know, how old you are or how many years you have in the league, I think that's something that's going to benefit me more.
How hands-on has he been with you? Like, is he a guy that kind of steps in and practice and plays a little bit, tries to show you a lot of stuff? Like, what's he been like as a coach for you so far?
I've only seen him play once, you know, as far as with us, and that was last year when we had, you know, a couple of injuries and we needed somebody to step in. He doesn't do too much playing with us anymore, but, you know, he's actually, you know, in the gym basically every day with us. And, you know, before the game, it's not, you know, likely you see a head coach out there watching, you know, pregame warm-ups and pregame workouts, and, you know, he does that. So it's good to see that, you know, he's invested in us and he's, you know, involved in every way. So, you know, it's you know, people always ask, you know, how much do you get to do with him and how much do you get to work out? And, you know, basically every day he's there watching us work out and telling us tips and telling us things that we can work on.
And, I mean, that's so cool because, I mean, JD and I are of the age where, you know, Jason Kidd, that's like a point guard god. You know, we're going to look back and he's going to be one of the all-time greats, I think. Like, we might even be underrating him in terms of his playing career. Just for you growing up, I mean, who were the guys you looked up to at the position?
Yeah, definitely Coach Kidd was somebody that I, you know, looked up to growing up, being a pass-first guy.
Even when he was even when he was killing the Raptors?
Yeah, I was actually at the game where Vince hit the game winning three, and
yeah,
Coach Kidd jumped on him and everything. So it's pretty, yeah. But I think him and Steve Nash were two of the guys, two past first point guards that I looked up to, and guys that people loved playing with, and they made a lot of other guys money as much as themselves. Mm-hmm. So just being somebody that people loved playing with, and hearing how the coaches talk about him now is something that, not everybody has to do, but it's something that, I hope I could get to win.
Hey, listen, man, before we go, I want to ask quickly about your older brother, about Dylan. He transferred from Villanova to Oregon this year. I think he's joining, Dylan Brooks, other CIA Bounce alum. I mean, that team is going to be filthy this year. I assume you guys have been in touch a lot. I mean, how's the transition been for him so far?
It's been good. He tells me that he's playing really well. A lot of people are impressed with, what he can do, in a system where, he has a lot more freedom than he had in the past.
Yeah.
But I think he's just, really loving the school of Oregon, but also the basketball side of it. So I'm actually really excited to see him play and see what he can do, with a lot more playing time, but also, a lot more, freedom basketball-wise.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a really, really fun team to watch in college. And in the NBA, I mean, the Milwaukee Bucks, you guys are going to be crazy fun to watch too. Like we talked about it, the athletic guys, a young team, a cool system building on what you did last year. Last thing, what's your prediction for you guys this year?
Prediction, I think, we're just focused on, getting back to where we were, last year.
And playoffs.
Back into the playoffs for sure. And just working towards it. We have a long way to go and a lot of things to, work on, a lot of things to fix, having some new guys added in there. But, I think if we can, just continue to come together and listen, buy into what Coach is doing, I think we'll be able to get back there.
Yeah, I don't think too many people have you guys outside the playoffs this year. Certainly we don't.
Yeah, hopefully. We'll see.
All right, man.
See how it goes and keep working at it.
Well said. Really appreciate you taking the time, Tyler, man. All the best, all right? Good luck this season.
Thank you.
Take care, man.
Thank you.
Always nice to catch up with a Canadian guy. I feel like he's a little bit of a forgotten dude in these parts just because he did sit out a lot of last season, spent a lot in the D-League, and then Canada this year, when they get a lot of exposure, Ennis was kind of out of the limelight because of that shoulder injury, wasn't playing with the national team.
And we didn't get to it with Tyler, but we've spoken about this. I mean, he's a guy who should be slated for a point guard spot on that national team roster.
We forgot to talk about this with Tyler because we clearly did in the pre-interview process. But whatever. It was all good. Everything else was good.
But, I mean, I think he's going to be a huge part of the national team is what I'm trying to get at. More so than he is going to be part of the Bucks team this season. That being said, I think we both, we said it with Tyler, we both really like what's going on with that team right now.
Yeah, so let's set things up just real quick. So, like we said off the top of the show, we're going to run down every team and every division just quickly. What Dave and I agreed to do to keep things kind of tight with the show is to just have our one thing to watch when it comes to each team in each division. So,
hey man, I didn't sign anything.
I know we didn't sign things. We'll probably spend a little bit more time on teams we're a little bit more interested in. And one of those teams might be the Bucks. And starting off there, you got Ennis recovering from an injury. Jabari Parker is getting pretty close. They don't know if he's going to start the season opener. He says he's still getting his legs back under him. But you like the Bucks this year.
They're just really fun to watch. And, I like any young team that's kind of growing together. I think it's always a good sign. And that's what's going on there. Last year was really year one of kind of the new Milwaukee Bucks. And I think they got a bright future. Parker is one of the most interesting guys on that team because, how many games did he play before he got hurt last year? Like two, five?
Yeah, he was really quick. I don't think he played seven games.
But when he did play, he looked really impressive. He looked like he was ready. So it's going to be interesting to see if he's ready now this season. They did like the real training camp on NBA TV and they were interviewing him and he was sitting there in like a wife beater and he had like a full on like muffin top going on. So I think he's still working his way back into shape. But he's one of those guys who might never be like in great shape, like a Zach Randolph who might always be a little bit out of shape and still be crazy effective. So I'm not too worried about that. But the one guy, if we're talking Milwaukee, there's one guy we need to talk about. And, thankfully Ennis touched on Monroe because that is their biggest addition this season. But when it comes to the Bucks, it's all about Giannis Antetokounmpo.
So that's your thing to watch this season. By the way, this is really odd. I'm looking at this now, but he actually played like good chunk. He played 25 games.
Who?
Parker.
Yeah, that's what I said. 2 to 25 games.
Two. I didn't have a recollection of 25 games. I guess I slept on the Bucks a little bit last year. But yeah, we really were robbed of a bit of an MVP or a good rookie of the year race between him.
But listen, what about Giannis?
What's not to like about the guy? He's going to have another year of progression. He's been.
What kind of jump do you think he makes this season? Because he's a guy who it's really enticing to look at his long term potential. You know, like a guy like Bruno, where you just look at the skills. And you say what this guy could be in 5 years, but what can he be this year?
Well, if you look at the way that he's progressed so far, he basically doubled his scoring from year one to year two. He increased his rebounding, he increased his assists. He improved just about in every single area of his game. I don't think that he will be. I don't think he's going to double his scoring totals again this year. I don't think he's a 24 point per game guy. But I mean, especially with Parker. If Parker's not going to be in the first couple of games, I expect him to be kind of their go-to guy, him and Greg Monroe. It's going to be interesting to see how the shooting is dispersed, but I think that he's going to be a solid like 18 and 8 guy. I think that's not unreasonable to expect from him. Plus, he's going to defend a lot of top guys, probably be able to grab a steal and a block a game.
Averaged a steal and a block a game last season. The thing to watch with him is kind of his usage, how Kidd uses him. I mean, we talked with Tyler about the two point guard lineups, and I think Antetokounmpo is a guy who I don't know if it helped in the fact that he's played, I think, all five positions so far in his career. I mean, yeah, he's got the skill set to do it, but I think key for him is going to be to kind of identify exactly what they want him to be. Is he going to be that athletic wing? Is he going to be a mismatch nightmare, like a chess piece where you do move him around a lot? It remains to be seen, but I think, if they keep him at that small forward, maybe even as a big shooting guard, that's kind of where his future is.
See, I didn't mind him moving around because it's the same thing that you had with Bruno, where it's like you need to find out what you have in this guy. And you need to throw him pretty much at every scenario that you can to see exactly where he's gonna land out. And I don't really like him as a big shooting guard because he proved last season that his three-point shot still needs a lot of work. So I think right now where he still needs to get hit most of his buckets is going to the cup and scoring there. And I like him doing that, but he definitely has to increase on the three-point shot. It's something that we talked about with Andrew Wiggins, but shooting 15% from behind the arc last year, like that's just unacceptable. You have to be better than that. He's got to figure out that jumper a little bit better, and that's going to be the real next step for him. The handle, I thought, really improved last year. The defense improved last year. Now let's see if the guy can score. Of course, again, though, that's why you go get Greg Monroe, and that brings me to my thing to watch, which is him. I really like the move back to center. I think that playing in Detroit, it was tough for him at times, having him, Drummond, and Josh Smith for a while, all balancing kind of that spot and having him push down power forward position. Now he gets to move down back on the block where he's best suited. He's a guy that can stretch the floor a little bit and shoot. I like the upside for them. And you remember last year in the playoffs, the Bucks offense stagnated at times. And you and I talked about this before, but it's like they were looking to Jared Bayless for big crunch time buckets.
Yeah, there was a point where he was kind of their go-to guy down the stretch.
Right, and if you're playing isolation ball for Jared Bayless in a playoff game, like that's just really not a good thing for you. So to be able to now upgrade to go to say, hey, you know what? We're going to have Jabari Parker. We're going to have another year of Antetokounmpo. We're going to have Greg Monroe now on the low block to score. I really like where this team is trending, and I loved the fact that they were able to get Greg Monroe. A shocker, too, because, a small market landed a big free agent, and kudos to Greg Monroe.
It's because they paid him big money.
Totally, but there were other teams that were lined up to pay him big money. The Knicks were one of those suitors that was ready to pay him, and this guy decided, like, I'm going to go to the best basketball situation for me, and I really think it is, and I think it's going to pay off for him big time.
Another guy who we can't not mention, going to build off a big breakout year last season, Chris Middleton. He's one of those kind of under-the-radar guys who just...
They just have so many big long freaks. Like I love the way that team is composed right now.
Also, we've talked about it. The new uniforms, very nice,
very on point. So do the Bucks end up in a similar position as they did last year?
Yeah, well, I think they could make a push for a 4-5 seed. I think a 5 seed is kind of their top potential, and pretty realistic probably, especially if they stay healthy.
A top 4 seed.
I changed it to 5.
Okay, I'm going to say that they don't. I think that they kind of stay kind of hovering in the same area. I think that they end up around 6, but that they're a team that's going to be competitive every single night. But that's where I kind of see them slotting in 6, third best team in the division.
third best team in the division. So, okay, the Central Division, just to run down the teams quickly, it's Milwaukee, Indiana, Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland. So I'm going to go ahead and presume that you think Cleveland is the number one team in that division.
No. Of course.
All right.
Could
well,
you not?
Oh, my
that's,
God.
No.
Okay, so let's talk about the Cavs quickly here. You know, they. I don't know how close. They weren't really close to winning it all last season. I mean, the finals was, aside from
it's kind of an odd thing to say when the team was in the finals.
No, but I mean, like, did they ever have a chance of winning that series after the first or second game?
You were picking them to win.
Before the series started.
No, and you remember after game one, the Cavs won and you were sending me all those texts? I told you.
I don't remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
No, you were all over the Cavs. No, LeBron was playing out of his mind. They were definitely in that series.
So now you add Kevin Love right now. You add Kyrie Irving later.
I think he's
still a couple months away. And Shumpert. You got Mozgov for the full season. Tristan Thompson still a question mark. There's a lot going on with this Cavs team. Obviously,
okay,
let me settle
the Tristan Thompson thing though quickly. Like, whether or not he's going to be with this team in the long term,
he's going to be there this season.
But he's there this season. Yeah. So for anybody that's like, oh, well, we got to see how this plays out. Like, Tristan Thompson is going to play this season
with the
Cavs.
I think the concern comes around more so like when it involves the like distraction factor, which I don't think is big at all. But that's, I think, when people point to Thompson as a concern for this Cavs team this season, I think they just mean in terms of, you know, locker room dynamics, keeping focus and whatnot. And LeBron alluded to that on the social medias.
I just think that stuff's a little bit overplayed, especially with the composition of this roster. This is a veteran team. You look at guys, even like it starts obviously with LeBron, but then you go to guys like Kevin Love, Anderson Varejao. I actually really liked their offseason pickups. I was going to mention to you, like, they didn't lose anyone of consequence. They lost Miller, Haywood, and Perkins. Who cares? They upgraded at the wing position by adding Richard Jefferson. He's long in the tooth, but he shot 43% from deep last season.
Dude, Richard Jefferson posterized somebody.
Yeah, it didn't count. That basket didn't count. Oh, the other day. I thought you were talking about last season.
No, in preseason.
Yeah. He's got...
I'm going to look it up.
He's still got some lift. I like him. But yeah, again, he's a good deep shooter. And I really do believe he's an upgrade for Miller. He's going to be someone that can still defend a little bit of his position. Like that pickup, and
so
I loved...
your thing to watch with the Cavs is Richard Jefferson.
No, but I did love the addition of Mo Williams as well. Like, he's got a lot left in the tank. He averaged 14-6 last year. Like, he's a good bench scorer. He's going to be able to someone that fills in for Kyrie while the injury bug continues to bite him. I really like what the Cavs did in the offseason.
The Jefferson dunk was on Walter Tavares, the, like, 7'5" rookie for the Hawks.
I like him. I like Walter.
Go YouTube it. It was insane, especially for a guy who is however old Richard Jefferson is. But yeah, great offseason for them. They did nothing wrong, everything right. What's your big thing to watch for them this season?
I think it's Kevin Love.
Yeah.
He looks svelte. He looks thin. he does. He looks like he's in great shape.
But have you been reading Kyle Lowry stories?
That's
the adjective everybody uses.
You know what, though? He is svelte.
Yeah.
That's good. Well,
including
it's
Casey.
It's a good word. Kevin Love, he looks good. He looks svelte. I really think that you're going to see him employed a lot as the primary scorer in secondary units. I think, obviously, he's going to be a starter, but I think that they're going to be able to rest LeBron a lot this season and rely on him and kind of, like, hopefully at least put him on that low block, let him score a lot more. It was huge for them that he came back. There were so many teams that were waiting in the wings. One of them, the Raptors division rival, the Boston Celtics, that would have loved to gobble up a player like Kevin Love. Cleveland manages to keep him, and I think that there's a sense of urgency with this group. They're a veteran group. They're pretty much loaded now at every position. I like them to win the title this year.
Yeah, they got to be they're definitely favorites in the East. You know, you're right. Kevin Love is a huge, huge story to watch for them this season, because if he's playing at a high level, and especially if Kyrie Irving's back, it means that they can rest LeBron a little bit during the season, which we saw in the playoffs how much they're going to be using him. So to keep him healthy, keep him rested, is key for that team. Okay, let's move on real quick here. The other team that we like in this division that everybody likes is, maybe not everybody, the Chicago Bulls.
I like them.
What do you think about Chicago? There's a little talk of the rift between Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler. Again, I think that's probably blown out of proportion. Although you never know. I mean, when it's two backcourt guys like that having to share the ball in a way like that, I mean, that dynamic is really interesting. You know, it's something I hope we get to touch on with Isaiah. But Chicago, you know, they're another team bringing back the same core. They didn't lose anything. They just added. Bobby Portis, rookie you really liked at the draft, has looked good in the preseason.
So great. He's averaging like 12, he's like averaging 10 and 12.
What's his name? Dougie McBuckets.
Yeah, McDermott's going to have another year.
Killing
healthy.
It. He's going to get some more playing time.
They're really their biggest loss is Tibbs. And a lot of people look at that as kind of a big question mark heading in the season because of the defensive attitude that he brought to this team and the fact that, you know, he was a big guy that stuck up for his players and whatnot. But I have a hard time believing that the toxic nature between him and the front office didn't have some spillover effect with the team. And I'd be a little bit more nervous if this team was like, we're going to replace Tibbs with Mike D'Antoni. I'd be like, ooh, don't really see how that works out. But they go out and they get a guy like Fred Hoiberg, who new to coaching in the NBA, but not, who's a former player, and he turned around an Iowa State program that was 15 and 17 the year before he got there, left there with a 67% win percentage. So I don't think that he was probably one of the sexiest coaching hires of the offseason, and I think that he's going to work out for them.
I don't know how much success at Iowa State is going to translate to the NBA, to be honest with you.
I'm just saying that this guy is someone that's, in the brief coaching career that he's had, proven to be very effective. He was a guy that was targeted by a few teams. Mm-hmm. The Bulls ended up landing him. He goes there and he gets, like we mentioned, a front court that's bolstered with just a ton of assets. But I still think that what you're saying about the Derrick Rose thing being overblown, I think that's my thing to watch, which is the Derrick Rose saga. And he admitted that it was out of form for him to talk about free agency or to be talking and looking ahead to that. And it was
that was a shocker, yeah.
Yeah, and especially since it was a weird thing because they weren't asking him a question about free agency. He just kind of went there on his own. And I think that this is a guy who's played a combined 71 regular season games in the last two seasons. And Jimmy Butler, I feel like this is Jimmy Butler's team now. And how Derrick Rose reacts to kind of being that secondary guy or maybe even third guy, depending on how well if Pau Gasol is able to repeat that last season he just had.
But as it stands right now, I think Derrick Rose is the third best player on that team.
That's what I mean. It's just like, I just wonder if he's going to be comfortable in that role and if he's really still looking out for himself, then I wonder if he's going to start making some noise in that team. I think you mentioned this in your fearless predictions before the seasons that Derrick Rose would be the guy to watch that might get flipped. Was that, mm-hmm.
Because listen, the thing is that when Derrick Rose is out of the lineup, that team is still good.
They are good. They're still thin at the point guard position. Like, I don't really want to go in with Aaron Brooks and Kirk Heinrich. But if they could find a way to get somebody back in a trade for him, I don't think that they would be so hesitant of it. It's just, it's tough because, again, he was so popular in Chicago. And you see that brilliance. Like, he averages 29 points per game in three games in that Cavs series going head-to-head with LeBron. And you see it a little bit, and you want to wonder, but that's
just... You know, for better and for worse, sports is totally just a "what have you done for me lately" thing. And when you're in and out over the last two, three seasons, you know,
He's certainly not the Derrick Rose of old. And same goes for Joakim Noah, who's in a contract year, and I don't know if he's with Chicago past this season as well.
Yeah, well, he's just gonna have a much smaller role than what we're used to from him.
Want to do the less fun teams in the Central?
Well, we're just gonna rip through these real quick. Do you have anything to say about the Indiana Pacers? This is to me maybe the weirdest roster in the league. You got Paul George coming back. Don't know what to expect from him. I think he'll be pretty decent, but I don't, you know, he's just a giant question mark. Monte Ellis is the guy who, their big addition from the offseason, which, you know, I guess they needed that secondary scoring, and he's going to provide that. He might even be their leading scorer, depending on how George is playing. But outside of those two guys, that roster is just bizarre. I mean, it's just a weird mishmash of different kind of veteran guys and undefined roles. I just don't know what's going on there.
I love Monte Ellis, and I really like, obviously, I really love him because of the way that he scores the basketball, but this Pacers team is going to have to be one of the best offenses in the NBA if they're going to even think about a playoff spot.
And guess what? They're not going to be.
I look at them, and I'm going, okay, so you let go of Hibbert, West, and Scola, and you replace them with
Jordan Hill
and Miles Turner. Front court is about as paper thin as it gets.
Okay, that's my thing to watch. Miles Turner is going to be actually pretty good this year.
Okay, I think he's going to be totally raw, and that I'm going to play this prediction later on in the season and be like, you know how you said that, and then he averaged 4 points and 3 rebounds a game? My thing to watch is obviously Paul George and him playing at the four. He's going to be spending a lot of time there, and I'm already curious about how he's going to be coming back.
I don't buy it.
He's definitely going to be doing. He's going to be playing like basically a Dirk role. I think you're going to see a lot of really fun
that's
pick
stupid.
And pop, pick and roll action with him and George Hill and Monte Ellis. And I just want to see if he can bounce back that guy that was in the MVP discussion a couple of years ago. I wonder if he's going to be able to do that defending bigs if he's playing the four.
Yeah, we'll find out. What about Detroit? You got anything to say about Detroit?
Stan Van, year two. Thing to watch?
I don't know.
Reggie Jackson and Brandon Jennings.
This is probably the least interesting team in the NBA to me, is Detroit. The thing to watch will be Stanley Johnson, their rookie who's been lights
been
out
dominant
in the
preseason. I don't know.
And they're going to play him not at like a, not a point forward, but he's going to be doing a lot of, have a lot of ball handling duties, initiating the offense. He might surprise some people, but I mean, this is a team with a bleak future, in my opinion,
okay,
and an even bleaker present.
They went 12-3 after they cut ties with Josh Smith last season. Do you not remember the little hype run that they had?
Yeah, I mean,
Brandon
Jennings
was playing out of his mind. I got his numbers here. He was 44% from the field, 40% from deep. He had his assists and steals were both up. And their offense went from 94.4 points per game to 104 points per game.
Listen, I take it back. I'm excited about Brandon Jennings this season.
Yeah, the only thing is that he's not going to be back until November or December after that Achilles injury.
More specifically, I'm excited about the team that they trade Brandon Jennings to, where he then puts up 50 points in
his
first game.
Okay, so then there you go. And I want to ask Isaiah Thomas about this later, his former club, is can those two guys exist? And I don't think they can. And I'm wondering if Reggie Jackson, not the baseball player, was worth the gamble.
He was not. Okay, so listen, when we come back, we are going to talk about the Southeast Division. This is a stacked division, probably the most competitive in the Eastern Conference for sure. We got Charlotte, Atlanta, Washington, Orlando, Miami.
I like
all of those teams except for one. We'll find out which one it is after this.
This is Tracy Murray from your Toronto Raptors, and you listen to Free Association.
This is Free Association. As promised, it's time to look at the Southeast Division. You know, not too much debate between us, JD, in terms of the standings when we looked at the Central. I think we're in agreement. Cavs.
Bulls.
Bulls.
Bucks.
Pacers, Pistons.
Yeah, I think we agree.
Pretty straightforward. But the Southeast, that's a different story altogether, because I think every team here except for Charlotte has a really strong chance to make some noise this season. Oh. But we vary greatly in terms of the final standing. So we're going to go through the division. We'll do it in your order. You know, just in the break, you told me where you thought these teams will shake out. So let's start
with... Yeah, I'm ready because I want to start off with Orlando.
Yeah, and I think
that's
crazy.
You think they're going to make noise?
I like
in
Orlando.
Terms of like scream, their fans screaming like, when will we ever compete?
No, I mean like as in like literally like as they play basketball, you'll hear like baskets go through the net. You'll hear shoes on the court.
Okay.
No, I think they're going to be a good team.
All right. So let's start with Orlando.
Hold on. Not a good team. I think they're going to be an interesting team.
Well, they're going to be interesting because they've had 7 first round picks drafted in the last 3 seasons.
Ooh,
so,
that's a stat.
So you want to look at that team and be like, hey, are one of these guys going to emerge and be a legitimate star? We saw some things from Elfrid Payton we liked last year. We saw some things from Aaron Gordon I think I like this year. You and I are both in agreement we like the Hezonja pick, but I don't really think that they have a guy that's going to be a superstar of that group.
So can I let me know if I'm speaking incorrectly for you, but your thing to watch this year is who's going to emerge as the alpha dog in Orlando?
You've got it.
Oh, look at that.
Can they develop a star?
Yeah, and that's a great thing to watch for. I'm with you on that. So who do you think it's going to be? I mean, the name that sticks out for me right now is Victor Oladipo. The only thing is though, I don't think, you know, his ceiling isn't to be a team's best player. He's going to be a really good second or third dog.
I love Oladipo. I like Magic were some team. There's some stat that I'm kind of blank on right now, but I think that they were one of the only team in the NBA to have 3 guys average over 17 a game last season.
And Vucevic, Oladipo, and
Tobias Harris.
Thank you.
But I just think that right now, if I look at that team, that offensively, I think that their star right now is Vucevic. The problem is that he's a nightmare on defense, and he provides zero rim protection when he's on the floor.
He's a great fantasy player.
Exactly.
More so than
great fantasy player, but not really a guy who can defend his position at all. I think their best player right now is Tobias Harris, and I think that it was a coup that they were able to retain him. I think that's a big step for them. But I think the only guy that you can look at right now and be like, I hope that he's a superstar, that he's an all-star, is their first-round pick from this year, Hezonja. And he's a major question mark as a guy coming in from Europe. Like, you hear all the things about him. We've seen the YouTube clips, seen a couple of things from the preseason. But as of right now, I don't view Payton, Oladipo, Harris, Vucevic, certainly some of those other first-round picks, by the way, that I mentioned are like Andrew Nicholson. So, like, obviously, I think it's the books out that Andrew Nicholson's never going to be a superstar. But I look at those grouping of guys, I think all good players. I like the way they're moving, but I just don't see a star in the mix.
It'll be interesting to see. Sadly, I'm probably with you, but I think collectively that becomes a really fun team to watch.
Just can't get any stops.
I think, you know, maybe like a Bucks kind of situation. Bucks of the Southeast, where this group grows
but
together.
But the Bucks play D.
And they learn to play D.
Yeah. One good thing for them, big coaching upgrade.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so
who they bring in?
Let's just watch out for that a little bit. Like,
who they
you
bring
go
in?
You go from you're mad because I'm ignoring you?
Oh, I'm asking who they brought in.
Scott Skiles.
Yes. Big up.
Who has had speaking of Bucks.
Yeah.
Passed with the Bucks. And one game assist leader. Let's move on to the next team who we both kind of think is going to be a tire fire, which is Charlotte.
Yeah, Charlotte is the team that I'd put at the bottom of this division, below Orlando. But I digress. You know, Charlotte, I think they're a bit of a mess right now. I don't think they know who they are. You know, I don't expect Jefferson to stay healthy for the whole season. And without him in the line.
Oh, that's a bold prediction.
It's not at all. It's just, it's like an inevitability. And so take him out of the lineup. And that's a pretty weak team, especially since Batum is hurt, I believe.
No, they lost MKG for the season.
MKG Batum is hurt. That's
hurt.
The one.
MKG's
and that kills him because he's kind of the core of their defense. I think he was going to grow offensively, but they brought in Batum, who their coach says is going to be their go-to guy. I just think this all spells high lottery.
So I'm glad you brought that up because we're on pretty much the exact same page. I look at this team and I'm like,
but you think Orlando's worse?
Yeah, I do think Orlando's worse, but okay. Just because I think that if Jefferson can play 68 games, which is honestly maybe a little bit of a stretch, they'll be all right.
Is Kemba Walker the best player on Orlando if he's on that team?
He's not. The thing about Kemba Walker is he's really not that efficient of a scorer. Like, he's a volume shooter and he's someone that has a great handle and he's sneaky good defensively. But like, just the advanced numbers that don't really bear out with that team. But yeah, I think right now if he steps in there, he's their best. Maybe Vucevic just because of what he can do.
I think Tobias Harris doesn't get enough credit.
Yeah, it's just I know. Of course he doesn't. But I think Al Jefferson would definitely be their best player. But we're on the same wavelength here. I just think that Big Al missed 17 games last season and he had arguably the worst year of his career. So my thing to watch is, can Frank Kaminsky and Cody Zeller take some minutes off of
Frank Kaminsky, Frank the Tank, I forgot about that.
So they passed on Justice Winslow to take Frank Kaminsky. Yeah. So this guy better be able to alleviate some minutes off of Big Al. And I just don't see how Zeller and Kaminsky are going to be able to play at a high enough level. They bring in like Lynn and they made a kind of nice trade for Batum. But I think it would be really funny if Noah Vonleh turned out to be the best player of their young bigs. He threw up a double-double the other day with 9 offensive rebounds, and he turns 20
now,
in
right?
August. Yeah, so I'm really not crazy about Charlotte this year. Sorry to my boy Matt.
Yeah, my thing to watch will be Batum. I mean, they brought him in. This guy's going to get his first chance of being a go-to star-type player in the NBA out of that Portland system. Will it work? I don't know. I'm not too optimistic.
Going to play a lot, that's for
we'll
sure.
We'll see, exactly. He'll get his shots this season. Another fantasy guy, maybe.
You want to go to my next team or your next team here?
No. Well, this is all your list.
So
mine would be radically different.
I think that Miami will be the third best team in the regular season in the Southeast Division. And hear me out. Okay. This is my thing to watch. Dwayne Wade's health. He's only played 65 games in one of the past four seasons, and he turns 34 in January. I'm a little worried that Dwayne Wade is going to be able to stay healthy enough throughout the regular season for the Heat to put up enough wins to surpass Atlanta and to surpass the Wizards. I think that they're going to be a really tough out in the postseason. I mean, what's not to love? Like, they got Chris Bosh and Goran Dragic going to be playing screen and roll action. Justice Winslow was a steal for them. They're going to bring back a healthy McBob. They got a good flyer with Gerald Green. So a very sexy team this season. I'm just saying I'm watching out for Dwayne Wade's health this year and potentially decline at 34.
I really like Miami this year. I like getting Bosch back healthy. Again, we talked about it a lot. The pick and roll, pick and pop possibilities with him and Goran Dragic, I think, is just limitless. And it also kind of helps you hedge your bets against Dwayne Wade's health, because you're right. I mean, it's whatever. He's getting older. He gets hurt a lot. But you got these guys in place who can carry the team without Wade. I mean, he doesn't have to be the guy like he's been, like we're used to seeing him have to be in Miami. He's got a lot of help still. Amari Stoudemire is another guy who has been playing well so far. I mean, we'll see if it lasts. Hassan Whiteside has got to look at. But for me, the thing to watch is all about that Dragic-Bosch combo and whether it can live up to the hype, or at least the potential. Me too. I think this is the team.
Everything they win the Southeast?
Luol Deng's another nice player. This is the team that I think can win this division if all goes right. I really do.
Yeah,
I
all like goes right includes Dwayne Wade being healthy and playing at a high level. One thing against my argument, his per 36 numbers, they haven't really dropped off in the last 3 years. No, he's been very effective.
Wade's still Wade. I really like Miami. I think to put them third, I can see why you do it. I just don't agree with it because you have the second best team right now as the Washington Wizards.
The Wizards.
Who I love the backcourt. I don't love too much else about this team. That being said, you know, Wall and Beal are good enough to carry this team to a potential division title. But I'm not completely sold on Washington. I know they murdered the Raptors last season, but I didn't see enough additions.
Not only did they murder. Okay, so let me rebuttal quickly. One is that I don't think that there's just their front court is good or their back court is good. I think that their front court is good too. I think Marcin Gortat is a perfect player to play with John Wall. And if your best player is John Wall, you want to surround him with guys that work to play with John Wall.
You know, that's an interesting point because their front court, I don't think like individually don't stand out at you too much, you know, an aging Gortat and
Nene. With this team.
But they do fit. They know their role really well, which in the NBA, that's what it's all about, is knowing what's asked of you and performing.
So they lose Paul Pierce, which is like kind of a tough go. And we should have Brad Beal on this podcast next week, by the way. And we'll ask him about the loss of Paul Pierce and his veteran presence and the fact that he's a go-to clutch scorer. But and outside of losing him as a guy that you can give the ball to late in games, I actually liked what they did at the small forward position in terms of backing him up there.
Is this your thing to watch?
No. Just quickly. Oh. Like, they added Jared Dudley, who I really like. Good 3-and-D guy. Yeah. They added Alan Anderson, who you and I both, I think, like.
But
he brings a toughness in the net.
You can't
rely on him. Of course,
no
one's saying that he's Paul Pierce, but let's not forget how old Paul Pierce is. He's another, like, I'm just saying that they added some stuff at the position. They added Gary Neal, who's a guy who can score, too.
There's one name you're leaving out as far as the Wizards' small forwards.
That's my thing to watch.
Lay it on me.
Otto Porter Jr.
Yeah.
I think Bradley Beal and John Wall are legit stars, and obviously their success is going to hinge on these two, but for this team to take the next step, we got to see the Porter that we saw in the playoffs and not the Porter we saw in the regular season.
And you got to imagine that playoff stretch is going to impact him this season. You head into the summer knowing what you just did. At that level, it's got to help your confidence.
I think it's a huge confidence booster for him. He averaged 10-8 in the playoffs, regular season 6-3. He shot 36% from deep in the playoffs, and he gave DeMar DeRozan fits. I think we all remember that.
Oh, yeah. And he was timely. It wasn't just the numbers. It was like the timing.
Exactly.
He always had the big shot when they needed it.
So I just think that if Otto Porter can continue to take a step and he can be that third guy in that band of Beal and Wall, then the Wizards are a legitimate Eastern contender.
So this is, and I think overall, this is by far the strongest division in the East.
No question.
The team that you have at number one, and I guess I agree with you on this one, although I like the idea of putting Miami there, but the Atlanta Hawks, number one in this division, they lose Damari Carroll, and that's about it. They're still returning the core of a team that was the best in the East last year. What's your thing to watch for Atlanta?
My thing to watch for the Hawks? How big of a narrative is losing Damari Carroll? Because, yes, they brought in Tim Hardaway Jr. Yes, they brought in Chago Splitter. Yes, most of this core is returning. But there was kind of a narrative being sold lately that I've heard from a lot of Hawks people that, oh, well, or not Hawks people, but fans, that's saying that, well, you know, they lost their fifth best starter on a team that had four All-Stars. But Carroll, as we've seen quickly with the Raptors, is kind of a beast. He's an awesome 3-and-D guy. One of the best 3-and-D guys in the league.
He's been so impressive in the preseason.
He provided 40% three-point shooting for them, guarded their best wings players, hustles for tons of rebounds, and let them kind of hide Kyle Korver on defense. So you take that guy out and you replace him with Tim Hardaway Jr., who I'm not high on. I know you and I have debated about this player in the past, but I'm not a crazy Tim Hardaway Jr. fan. And you talk about Thabo Sefolosha. He's kind of a guy that's getting up there in age, and he just suffered a major injury that we haven't really seen him come back from yet. So I'm not really sure that Thabo and Tim Hardaway Jr. can be those two guys that kind of replace what they lost in Carroll. That said, I still do think that they're going to be the best team in the division. They're so well coached. They do have so many weapons. There's a ton of continuity there. I like Atlanta still this year. You?
I really like this team. Like I said, they keep their same... You know, this team is built around Al Horford, Paul Millsap, and Jeff Teague. And those guys didn't go anywhere. Those guys are all coming back. I guess my thing to watch would be the development of Dennis Schroeder.
No,
Schroeder.
I almost made that my thing. I like what I see from him. He just can't. He's got to shoot the three ball better. Same thing with Lottie.
Maybe he doesn't. I mean, I don't think everyone needs to do everything. Like, he can just have his game and be surrounded by shooters, and that could work too.
Ultimately, we agree that they were right to keep Millsap over Carroll?
Yeah, I mean, big picture, that's probably the way to go. I think it's harder to replace Millsap than it is Carroll. That said, I mean, it's a big loss, but I think they had enough pieces there to be able to stomach that loss and still move on. We're going to move on right now to everybody's favorite division, the Atlantic.
Everybody's favorite division who's a Raptors fan. God, yeah. Divisions are so meaningless now.
Yeah.
I mean, other than it's for ridiculous. Previews like this is like the main function of divisions now is to make preview shows a little bit more smooth.
So we're going to smooth right into our Atlantic division preview, and that's going to happen right after this.
Hey, this is Max from the Artels, and you're listening to Free Association. Whiskey bottles and brand new cars. Oak tree, you're in my way. There's too much coke and too much smoke. Look what's going on inside you.
What is that smell? Oh, I think it's the Atlantic Division, which kind of stinks right now.
Wafting.
Except for the top two teams, the rest of this division is...
Or are they?
Are they what?
I didn't finish my sentence. I have some things to say about... I know, but you're saying they're awful. I'm saying, or are they?
The division? Well, you do like the Knicks. That's right. Okay, so let's get right into it. Okay, JD, we're going based on your reverse order. So the final team... The last place team in this division, according to J.D. Bunkus.
The last team in this division is the last team division on every single person's list in the entire league, and that's the Philadelphia 76ers. I don't see what argument compile to say that this team is going to be any good.
Okay.
Let's just run through them because there's really not much to say. I really liked that they grabbed Nick Stauskas. I'm really hoping that friend of the show can continue to progress and really take a step forward. Really sucks that he got injured right away. Kind of sets him back a little bit behind the eight ball and allows some other guys to steal his minutes. But I think the only thing to watch here is can Jahlil Okafor win the Rookie of the Year award, and is he going to live up to the hype, the pre-draft hype?
Like, I think the thing to watch here, again, it's Okafor-based, and it's can Okafor average a 2010 as a rookie? Because I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility.
Neither do I.
He's going to get a ton of minutes. He's going to get a ton of touches, be the focal point for everything that franchise does. I mean, we're going to look back on it and say that they got so lucky that this guy fell to them in the draft.
They
could have had D'Angelo Russell and been like stuck in the mud for another 5 years.
It's going to be like the reparations for their fan base for the Embiid pick. Because like I said, I just have a tough time believing.
That's my new thing to watch is what the hell's going to happen to Joel Embiid?
He's going to never play. He's going to be Greg Oden 2.0. That's what's going to happen. He's going to be that guy that down the line a contender signs and you're like, oh,
well, let's
look out. They signed Joel Embiid. If they can get anything from him, it'll be good. And then it's be like, oh, they didn't get anything.
Let's move on from Philadelphia, the future home of number one overall pick Ben Simmons. It's a little 2016 draft talk for you, JD. Okay, so who do you got next? Second worst team in the Atlantic.
Brooklyn. And storyline to
no
watch.
Question.
Can I watch this team?
Answer no.
I don't know how I'm going to be able to bear. Okay, you know how I'm going to be bear? They have an excellent broadcast crew. I get to listen to Ian Eagle. So that's how you get to talk yourself into Nets games. But ugh, what an ugly team. Like, I have no interest here.
Like, what's your thing to watch?
I'm dead serious. Okay. I have storyline to watch. Can I watch this team?
I have nothing to add to that.
Okay, you know what? Can Andrea Bargnani find any semblance of a career here? Let's just put it that way. And I don't think the answer is yes. I actually kind of did like their offseason, though. They got rid of Darren Williams.
Bargnani had some nice years in Toronto.
Minus the Bargnani signing, I thought that getting rid of Darren Williams was decent. I think they try to keep getting rid of Joe Johnson. Hopefully he can land somewhere where he can make a difference. I don't know really why Brook Lopez stayed other than the money. Like, I guess that
that's
wanted to stay.
Reason.
But keeping Thaddeus Young for them was kind of a nice keep too.
Sure. Can we move on?
Yeah, we can. Okay. Definitely. I want to get to the Knicks.
All right. So the Knicks. And hey, we're going to talk to Isaiah Thomas after this segment.
Super cool.
I'm sure the Knicks are going to come up. He's got a lot of connections with that
yes.
team. But what are you, okay, just real quick here. What's your thing to watch for the Knicks?
My Knicks? Can
your
the Knicks not be a tire fire? The answer, probably not, but maybe. But maybe.
That's a great sign for their season.
Okay, so let me make my case for the Knicks. Good offseason. One of my favorite offseasons. They added a bunch of guys that are kind of... The O'Quinn signing is totally under the radar.
They added a bunch of guys who would be great if they were your seventh or eighth best player.
I don't agree with that. I don't think that Aaron Aflalo last year, like Aaron Aflalo,
if he's your sixth best player, you're okay.
Yeah.
Other than that, though.
So that's the thing. So hear me out. We've liked the Blazers in the past, and they took two of the good Blazers players. They took Aaron Aflalo, and they took Robin Lopez. I like both of those pickups. I think O'Quinn is sneaky good. Taking a flyer on Derek Williams is fine. I think legitimately what this all comes down to is Carmelo Anthony. And can this guy be the player that we've seen in the past? Because there are not too many guys in the East that are better than Carmelo Anthony. And as we know with the NBA, you're only as good as your best player. And if Carmelo Anthony can stay healthy and be the Melo that we've known in the past, I think the Knicks can very well challenge for an 8 seed, and I think people will be really surprised at what they can do. The coaching is a big question mark. Derek Fisher in the news these days. Let's just stay away from that. But
Derek Fisher is a bit of an ongoing mess.
I think that that's going to be a thing. And plus, Kristaps is a little further along than people thought. He's averaging 8-6 and a block and a half of the preseason so far.
I just don't think there's too much going on with this team this year. I mean, maybe down the line, what they have going for them, you're right, is Melo. Melo's a great, great player, especially offensively. I think people in the offseason were forgetting how good Kevin Durant is, but I think no one has been more overlooked than Carmelo Anthony, who's really just like a generational type offensive player.
Yep.
I just don't like what he's surrounded by, at least not at this point. Maybe they build towards something, but I'm not too optimistic. So on that note, let's move on. Your number two team in the Atlantic Division.
The Boston Celtics.
Okay.
I'm
with you here. Although I do think they will challenge the Raptors more than people give them credit for.
Can I get this off my chest right away? I'm sick of that storyline, okay?
What storyline?
The whole Boston's going to win the division storyline. Again, it's meaningless. I know. But in namesake only, like, let's get real, Boston. Like, let me level with you on something. Your team is not as good as your papers are selling it. Yes, you've got some depth. You get the whole Isaiah Thomas season. Oh, you stole Amir Johnson from us. There is no freaking way that this team is going to be better than the Toronto Raptors this year. I'm sorry. Period. End of story. They struck out on getting Kevin Love. That was their big offseason thing that they were hoping to get. And they end up getting the homeless man's Kevin Love in David Lee.
Hey, they also got Perry Jones.
Actually, I like Perry Jones.
Okay.
And they were able to re-sign Jay Crowder, who I think is really good. And they basically swap Brandon Bass with Amir Johnson, which is an upgrade.
This is a total sum of the parts team. I mean, I think when you look at them as a collective, they're way better than any of these guys are individually. Lee, you mentioned Amir Johnson, Isaiah Thomas. He was a huge revelation for them last season. Another year, Marcus Smart will be interesting to watch. Their rookies, Terry Rozier, and RJ Hunter.
Oh,
Avery Bradley
really like
still on this team. Kelly Olynyk.
They're deep.
Jay Crowder. Jonas Jerebko was pretty good
Marcus
for them.
Marcus Smart.
Late.
Like they,
yeah, I mentioned
like
Smart.
Isaiah Thomas. Like they've just
so
got...
So I think this is a playoff team again, no
yes,
question.
Yes, I do. I really do think they're a playoff team.
You just don't think
team.
They're going to challenge the Raps.
I look at the Raptors' talent. It's like, do they have anybody on that roster as good as Kyle Lowry? No. Do they have anybody as good on that roster as DeMar DeRozan? No.
Evan Turner, another guy on this team.
Is one of their... Yeah, he's fine too. Again, this is a really deep
random
team.
Random collection.
Okay, so here's my thing to watch with Boston. And this leads into all these depth guys. Will Boston make a big trade this season?
Well, they have pieces and picks to do it.
Yes, they have
more so picks. They have a ton of draft picks.
So let me run down some of these picks. They have the 2016 first round pick from Brooklyn, which should be a good one. They have the 2016 first round pick from Dallas, 2016 first round pick from Minnesota, 2016 first round pick from Cleveland. Like this is, those are a lot of boku to picks. They got the 2017 first round pick from Brooklyn, 2016 second round pick from Memphis, second round pick in 2016 from Utah, and 2017 from Brooklyn.
Yeah, you have to mention this is all gearing towards some kind of trade. I don't think the weird part is they have all this, with all those picks, you're in a great position to kind of build for the future, but they're almost like too good for that right now.
You are, but they've already got some pieces. Ground. They drafted James Young last year. They got Marcus Smart. Like you mentioned, RJ Hunter.
So do you try to move like Isaiah Thomas, who emerged as
your
best player?
No, I don't think so. No, Isaiah Thomas, I think, is here to stay. I don't think that you go out and acquire a guy like Isaiah. Remember, they flipped a pick to get Isaiah.
Yeah.
So I don't really see how he doesn't factor into their long-term plans. He's the only guy that I think on their roster you can really rely on to score the basketball right now. I just think that if you look at all these picks and you look at all these players, it's hard for me to imagine that this team isn't going to be able to swing for a guy. And that guy, I think they're really hoping is Boogie Cousins.
Oh, wow.
I really think that they're
a looking nightmare at, for the Raptors.
But they're looking at Sacramento. And if that goes off the rails early,
I think every team's looking at Sacramento.
Sure. But,
out how they can
but
get
nobody's going to be able to offer a package yeah. quite like that.
That's an interesting one. So I love that as a, that's my favorite thing to watch so far is what will the Celtics roster look like come All-Star break or trade deadline?
Come trade deadline. What will they do post-trade deadline?
Okay, so we're in agreement that the top team in the Atlantic Division this year is your Toronto Raptors.
That's right.
We're going to be doing a full Raptors preview, so we just, you know, we can hit on this pretty quickly, but your thing to watch for the team this season?
I think it's pretty clear that it's the defensive overhaul and how effective it's going to be. They made some pretty significant moves this offseason to get better on that end of the floor, adding Carroll, adding Joseph, adding Biombo. I think that for this Raptors team to take the next step, they have to be able to stop opposing teams. They need to be able to be better at the defensive end. That's Dwayne Casey's calling card. That's the thing to watch. And then you could also talk me into the DeMar DeRozan narrative is the other one, which is kind of similar to what we talked about with Derrick Rose and a little bit like where it's just, you got to look at him and say, like, if the Raptors aren't where they want to be come trade deadline day, if they don't feel like they're ready to, you know, be a team that can convince DeMar DeRozan that they're building something towards being, like, staying, that you have to think that they're going to be fielding calls on this guy.
Yeah, I think DeRozan looks at the team and says, you know, this is building towards something, and it's building towards something that I'm a major part of, and he's got to like that.
Dave Zarum refuses to even consider the possibility of DeMar DeRozan leaving.
No, I think it's a total possibility. I think it's unlikely. But I mean, we did our preview on Sportsnet.ca, those burning questions that we tackled last week. And I think it was Steve Long said, you know, if there's going to be what superstar is going to get traded. And he said DeRozan, and there's a decent argument to be made for it, which you just kind of did. My thing to watch for this team is, yes, it's all about the core going forward. You know, there's a lot of talk about the new additions, but they still bring back the same group. They're still relying on Lowry, DeRozan, Valanciunas. That's still your kind of nucleus. Now you add Carroll to the mix. So it's all about what those guys continue to do. But I'm going to flip it a little bit. I think there's a lot of interesting young talent on this team, and I want to see who steps up and emerges as another piece for that kind of core puzzle. Is it Norman Powell? Is DeLon Wright going to surprise people at point guard?
Don't you feel like if the Bulls and Raps could switch picks right now, first-round picks, they would both do it?
Why? Because you like Bobby Portis?
No, I love for okay, fine.
No,
I love Bobby Portis, but we're just saying with the DeMar DeRozan thing, where it's just like, or sorry, the Derrick Rose thing, where it's like there's a potential for disaster there, and they would love to have a point guard that could feasibly back him up, maybe a little bit better as a long term.
Oh,
project.
They might like DeLon Wright, but listen, the Raptors really like DeLon Wright. I mean, I've been talking to a lot of the coaches over the course of the preseason.
Well, of course, they're not going to be like, oh, we blew it.
No, but their point is that he's like far more, I guess part of it is because he's a 4-year player. We spoke about that last week. He's just pretty advanced in where he's at. And the cool part is that Lowry has taken ownership of him. Like he's grabbing Wright and taking him to workouts. You know, he's making sure that like he's there all the time. They're kind of doing everything together. And it's really going to benefit a guy like Wright in his rookie season.
He had a really cool piece in the Players Tribune. Is him and
his brother giving him advice. Yeah, that was Darrell Wright. That was really interesting. But yeah, I want to see which young guy steps up on this team. Maybe it's Corey Joseph, who's still a young dude, but looking great in the preseason. Everyone's talking about the way he's attacking the bucket, but he might have, you know, he's free here in Toronto compared to where
he was in San Antonio. There's a ton of fun stuff to talk about the Raptors. That's okay, why we'll save it for
yeah, we're going to do a whole episode on that. We're getting carried away because right now, calling in on the phone, on hold right now. We can't keep this guy on hold any longer.
He's been on hold for 15 minutes.
Isaiah Thomas is on the phone. Okay, we got to get to that. Okay, enough
Celtics? From the Celtics?
Oh, you know what? Not that Isaiah Thomas. No, the friggin' Hall of Fame legend, Isaiah Thomas.
Oh, man, we got to get to that then. Let's go.
This is Free Sis.
Association, please be joined down the line by NBA legend.
Legend with a capital L.
Oh, are you kidding? Isaiah Thomas. Again, Isaiah, how are you today?
Zeke, how you doing?
I am great. How are you guys doing?
Couldn't be more thrilled for this, man. Really appreciate you coming on the show. Let's get right to today's NBA. I mean, right now it's a point guards league. There's no question about that. You know, the rules favor point guards. The style of play favors point guard play. I mean, it must kill you that you're not still playing right now. I mean, you'd be dominating, wouldn't you?
I would definitely have a good time. The rules, you're absolutely right. The rules definitely favor the point guard. It favors the perimeter players. You know, there's no hand checking. So consequently, you know, the point guard, you know, has dribble moves now in front of him. If you look years back, when there was hand checking, and you can also use the arm bar, what they call it.
That's right.
You know, most of your ball handling had to be done on the side of you. Today, most of the ball handling is done in front of the defender. And I think right now this is probably the worst point guard defensive era that I've ever seen. I haven't seen a perimeter defensive play so poorly. Now, I know the rules have a lot to do with that. But containing your man and keeping your man in front of you, that's one of the first lines of defense. And right now, I don't see a lot of great defenders at the point guard position.
That's saying you had a pretty good career. I think you were pretty fine in terms of era that you played in. you were okay.
But you know, but it's interesting.
I did all right. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. just all right. But you know, I think it's really interesting what you're saying, because I assume, you know, a lot of that has to come down to kind of coaching and the way these kids are kind of coming up through the game. You know, I heard you speak, I forget where it was, but I heard you say, you know, about the lack of creativity amongst guards or just players in general. You know, everyone seems to be kind of built from the same mold. And when you talk about guys, you know, dribbling in front of them, you know, that comes to mind, the kind of same weak defense across the board, that comes to mind. I mean, is this something that's starting really early on for these guys, or is that something that's being kind of beat into them once they get to the NBA?
I think it's starting early on. You know, when we were taught the game was taught as an art form, as a way of expressing creativity. And you wanted to be original in your play, even mm-hmm. though you wanted to do things like someone else was doing, but you wanted to have an original style. You know, right now with analytics and the sharing of information, and everyone has access to the same information, mm-hmm. When everyone has access to the same information, it normalizes everything. Everyone starts to act, do, and think the same. So consequently, we don't see a lot of originality anymore in the NBA, and we don't see that creativeness. Every time I went out on the floor, I tried to paint a masterpiece. And if I did a move the day before, I wanted to come back and try something different. I always wanted to be a creator and always wanted to be original out on the floor. And I don't see much originality nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like things like signature moves. You know, you think of everyone kind of had their own go-to move that they would craft themselves, you know, alone on the court and then bring it to a 5-on-5 game or a pickup game or whatever it is. You just don't see that anymore.
Like, I don't know. That one guy on YouTube seems to be doing a pretty good job of taking everybody's signature moves and putting it. What's that guy's name?
I forget. Yeah, the guy's doing
he's
the
impressions. He's got to do one of you, Isaiah.
But even he's doing like little mannerisms. I mean, Isaiah's talking about like total kind of skill sets and your whole, your move set and how it's unique to each guy.
I'm also talking about being original with it, mm-hmm. coming up with something new. I think what made the 80s so golden was that you had a lot of originals coming to the league. No one had really played the game like Larry Bird came in playing mm-hmm. it.
Yeah.
Dr. J was an original. When you looked at Magic Johnson, 6'9", as a point guard, doing the things that he was doing at 6'9", he was an original. The things that I was doing at the point guard position, you know, it wasn't coming down playing like, you know, the traditional point guards. It was playing like the point guards play today. So there was a lot of originality that took place in the 80s. And even when you got into the 90s, you know, Jordan, the things that he brought to the game, even though they were similar to Dr. J and Julius Erving.
And David Thompson as well.
He added the jump shot, which made him different, which made him another original. So when you look at today's game, the only original player that I see doesn't play like anyone that I've seen play before, you know, is Kevin Durant.
Huh.
He plays a game like I've never seen anyone at his size play or do the things that he does. You know, LeBron James arguably is the best player in the NBA, but he has a little magic. He has a little Oscar. He has a little of everyone.
Did Durant has a...
He just... I don't know what he has, but he has it when he's on.
Hey, Isaiah, though, don't you kind of view it as a bit of a... maybe like a postmodern type of thing, though, where, you know, it's kind of like a movies, like everything's been done before. So now you just have kind of, you want to see guys put their own kind of fresh spin on the originals. And when you look at the game,
I don't think that's a good thing. You know, like you, in terms of movies, like everything's a remake. I think it's a bad thing. You don't, JD?
No, I love the NBA right now. I think it's in a really good state, but I'm saying when you look at it, do you not kind of look at some guys and just appreciate, hey, like this guy did, like I might've been the originator. I might have been the originator of something, and I might have been the creative one that invented something, but now there's this guy, and he puts his own flair, and he puts his own spin on it. And I'm wondering if there's one guy in the league right now that kind of pops for you that you look at, and he reminds you of yourself.
When we use the term originator and striving to be, you know, there are a lot of guys who are playing excellent basketball, and they're playing excellent basketball at a very high level. I look at Westbrook, and you know, I go with the OKC because you got Durant and Westbrook, mm-hmm. and the whole debate, can they play together, because they're really kind of two originals,
mm-hmm.
Something that we haven't seen. So I look at what Westbrook is doing at the point guard position, and he's trying to break out of the mold. He's trying to do something different. He's trying to be something different while doing something similar to other players. He's definitely putting his stamp on being an original attitude, ferocious type player at the point guard position.
Yeah, especially for a point guard. I mean, it's so rare to see the way he attacks the basket and whatnot. But, you know, you mentioned those guys in OKC having to coexist. And over in the East, I mean, I think it's a question that needs to be asked of a few teams, especially when you look at the backcourt of, you know, a lot of people talk about the Chicago Bulls right now with Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler. You know, obviously, you found a way to kind of coexist in a backcourt where the point guard and shooting guard are also your leading scorers with yourself and Joe Dumars. How do you see this playing out for the Bulls with these two guys?
I think it will play out well for them. I know both individuals want to win. Rose is dealing with, coming off years where he's had severe injuries, mm-hmm. where he's really had to change his game and change the way he plays, and give him credit for adapting and trying to change the way he plays. But I think he and Butler will get along fine in the backcourt, and where they've always made their mark is on the defensive side of the ball. We give the offensive side a lot of glory, and we talk a lot about scoring, but when you talk about two guys really defending,
yeah.
when they want to defend, I don't know if there's a better defensive backcourt in the NBA when they're healthy than Rose and Butler.
I'm glad you brought that up, though, because Dave and I were just talking about the Bulls, and we mentioned that their biggest loss in the offseason was Thibodeau, and he's kind of was their, you know, the lead guy in terms of that defensive mentality. So you still think that they'll, like, of course, their roster composition lends you to believe that they'll be a really good defensive team, but what type of an impact do you think Fred Hoiberg's going to have in his first year, and will they be able to replicate Tibbs' system?
You know, I agree with you in terms of Tibbs being a huge loss because he, you know, the coach was the leader of the team. There was no doubt who was leading the Chicago Bulls, and there was no doubt whose mentality was infused through that team. And it was his defensive mentality. And he set the tone from a coaching standpoint that trickled down to the players. And losing that defensive mindset, losing that defensive mentality, you know, it can cost them. Now, on the other side, you know, Horvath brings an offensive mindset and an offensive mentality that if they can find the balance between offense and defense, you know, then they got something. With Tibbs, it was all or nothing. The identity was a defensive identity. I think right now Chicago is trying to become a well-balanced team on the offensive side and the defensive side.
The one thing I'm curious about, I'm really curious to hear your take on why Tibbs, though, isn't coaching another team. Do you think he's waiting for the right situation? Where do you think he could land this year?
I think he's waiting for the right situation, and I think there'll be a number of opportunities available for him. You know, he's one of the great coaches in our game. He's highly and well thought of, you know, by all management. So he'll find another spot, and he'll find one soon. But I do think that he can take his time and pick and choose.
Okay, this is kind of an awkward transition because it kind of leans to your. Well, you're one of your old teams, but I think that one of the places like Tibbs would probably be sought after if things go south this season might be the Knicks. And I look at that team, and Dave and I have argued about this, but don't you think they kind of had a nice offseason? Like they added O'Quinn, Lopez, Aflalo. They took a flyer on Williams. And I just feel like if Carmelo is healthy, is there a chance that the Knicks could take a run at the 8 seed? Or am I just nuts?
No, I don't think you're nuts at all. And I said this, actually, I said this on Open Court, and a lot of the guys laughed at me. And so you and I are thinking very similar.
I'm happy about this.
Healthy because what Carmelo Anthony does when he's healthy, you can write down 30-plus wins with a healthy Carmelo Anthony.
Right.
Now, if everything is clicking, and everyone else plays well, then they'll get you 10 more wins. So you could be at the, you know, the 40 to 42 win mark, possibly, you know, pushing for an eighth spot in the East with a healthy Carmelo Anthony. And right now he appears to be healthy, playing well. Now can the supporting cast, you know, get him a couple more wins? You know, what the top 10, top 15 players in the league do, every night you walk out on the court, they give you a chance to win. And sometimes you may get an upset. But for the most part, if you got one of the top 10 to 15 players on your team, you're gonna have 30-plus wins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you go and look at past NBA champions, past finalists even. I mean, every team seems to have that guy, that top 10.
Not top to mention, guy. How many teams in the Eastern Conference have a better player than Carmelo Anthony? Not too many.
Yeah, maybe one. Okay, but keeping on the Knicks, you know, one thing I want to ask you about is, we've debated about him a lot, is the rookie, Kristaps Porzingis. I mean, a controversial pick. I think there's a ton of upside, but he's still kind of a huge question mark. Just what are your thoughts on him? What have you heard from him so far? And is that a pick that you would have made?
He's extremely talented. He's gifted. He can shoot the basketball. He's got all the basketball skills that you want a player to have. And I think if he can stay healthy and time, you know, permitted, you know, over the years, he'll turn out to be a good player and a good pick.
Mm-hmm. Isaiah, you've been part of rebuilding teams' health with the Raptors. You were here from the very ground up, and we'll get more into that, but. During your tenure here, you guys drafted Damon Stoudemire, Marcus Camby, and Tracy McGrady. And as it happens with a lot of loaded cores, talent-wise anyways, they don't always reach their aspiring potential, at least with that one team. And I'm kind of curious to get your read. I know this is kind of odd that in a preview people want to talk about the Sixers, but I'm curious to get your read on what Sam Hinkie is doing in Philadelphia and whether or not you think that this is going to be something that pays out there down the line, or if it's something that you just don't see working and you don't agree with.
But the jury is still out in terms of the testing phase and what their strategy is and if it will work. You know, they got a fine player in Okafor out of the draft. I think he'll be, you know, possibly the rookie of the year. And, you know, they have to keep developing their players. And what we did with when we drafted Stoudemire, who became rookie of the year, Camby, McGrady, traded for Doug Christie, and consulted on that draft with Glenn Grunwald, with Vince Carter. The thing that we had in place in Toronto early on, which teams are doing now, is we developed our players, and we made them better. We got them to the next level. Every player that came to Toronto that we drafted, I mean, Bill Christie ended up being a first-team all-defensive player. Again, Stoudemire was rookie of the year. Camby became the leading shot blocker and rebounded in the NBA. You know, McGrady became, you know, when healthy, arguably the, you know, one of the top 2-3 players in the NBA. So now when you drafted those guys, they weren't that, but you developed them into that. Same when you went to Indiana, and we got Jermaine O'Neal. And then we traded and we brought in Ron Artest and Brad Miller. Brad Miller became an all-star, and Jermaine O'Neal became an all-star. Ron Artest became an all-star and defensive player of the year. So you have to develop your players, you have to keep them going, and you got to get them to the next level. Can Philadelphia do that? That remains to be seen.
I mean, you just brought up the Pacers, and now I realize I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the team you used to coach. When you look at that team, the way that their offseason kind of went, they got rid of basically all of their bigs, and they've been saying, okay, we're going to go Jordan Hill and Paul George at the 5 and 4. This feels super reactionary to me that this team kind of blew up what they had and are going with this system. Are you kind of feeling the same way, or you like the way that they're going to be employing, or at least on paper, they're going to be employing Paul George this season?
I like what they did, and here's why I like it, because regardless of the team that they had last year, whenever you add a healthy Paul George and a Monte Ellis to your team, you get better.
Okay.
You know, and when you look at the Pacers, with Paul George and Monte Ellis, they are definitely better than they were last year. So I can't argue with anything that they did.
Yeah, that's going to be a really intriguing team to watch. A team that everyone listening to this show is going to be watching very closely is obviously the Toronto Raptors. You know, it's interesting you mentioned, you know, the importance of kind of developing your own guys. But when you look at what the Raptors did this offseason, is they went out and got guys who were already developed, kind of entering that prime phase of their career, specifically defensive-oriented guys. You know, Damari Carroll, the obvious name, but also, you know, Corey Joseph, Bismack Biyombo to a degree, Luis Scola, all big additions. I mean, I guess I just want your general thoughts on the Raps offseason, but I mean, is it too much change? I mean, they have a totally different identity, even though their core remains the same.
I like what the Raptors are doing. You know, Masai and Casey are on the same page,
yeah,
as you can see. They're building a solid team. They, even though they had some tough losses in the playoffs, they knew what they wanted in terms of Carroll. They went out and got him. And, you know, I think DeRozan will be better. Mm-hmm. But the biggest addition to the Raptors team this year will be the new look Kyle Lowry.
Yeah. The biggest addition is the loss of Kyle Lowry's weight.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at him, and you look at the type of player that he is now and what he was last year, the weight loss is dramatic. We know the type of attitude that he has. Mm-hmm. We know the type of leader that he is. So you're getting a healthy Lowry, whose weight is great, and you know he's going to be it. he's going to be your best player again.
I mean,
last year he had some tough moments, but you know, having him back full strength, full throttle, you know, he's going to make a big difference.
Yeah, we were talking about just even his numbers this preseason. I mean, he's averaging 30, shooting 70%, 25 only in 25 minutes a game. I mean, I know that's not sustainable, but he's just been amazing so far in the preseason. But it's weird. I mean, it's hard not to wonder, you know, why. Like, why now in terms of his weight loss and getting in super good shape and seeming like more focused than ever? Do you have any insight on that? Like, why now? Why not do this 3 years ago?
You know, my mom used to say, how does she put it? You know, youth is wasted on the young.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you know, as you get older, you get a little bit more smarter, and he definitely is getting older. He has more experience. They say experience is the best teacher,
mm-hmm.
And you know, you just have to give him credit for continuing to evolve and grow as a player and as a person.
You know, before we let you go, I just have a few more things to touch on. I just want to ask you about your experience here in Toronto. You know, obviously a huge, you know, JD touched on it before, a huge part of getting this franchise up and running. When you see, I mean, I know you were here last season as part of the kind of 20th anniversary stuff. When you see the success of the franchise today, I mean, did you see it coming to this extent? I mean, this is a team that was outdrawing hockey crowds. You know, if the Blue Jays weren't doing their thing right now, the Raptors would be a number one in the city this time of year, which 20 years ago was pretty unheard of. I mean, did you see this coming?
Not only that, though, the development of the game in the country as a whole. Like, last night at the ACC, there's four Canadian players on two rosters playing.
You know, I don't mean to sound arrogant when I say this, but John Batove and I, we sat down with a blank sheet of paper, and believe it or not, we did talk about 20 to 25 years from now,
wow,
what we want this town, all city, the Raptors to look like, feel like, and be. And everything that we did was with that thought in mind. And, you know, from the design of the uniform to the logo that we picked, to the marketing of the kids, and, you know, to the style of play that we wanted to implement and the people that we wanted to draft. I mean, it was all charted out, and I'm proud, and I think John and everyone else is proud that we were able to accomplish it. You know, when we look back on the Raptors, you know, there was two international franchises, and it was a huge experiment. Could basketball make it outside of America on international soil? And one started in Vancouver and the other started in Toronto. And the huge success is the Toronto Raptors and the Vancouver Grizzlies are now in Memphis. So we take tremendous pride in what we did, and we take tremendous pride in the fans' experience and what they're experiencing in Toronto.
And it's just been so cool to see that rise happen firsthand. I mean, to hear that you charted this out 20, 25 years ago. I mean, that's super, 20 years ago, rather. That's super impressive. Everything seems to have come to fruition. I mean, it feels like we're only just starting here. But, you know, when you look back, and again, JD mentioned these names, and I couldn't help but think about it. You know, Camby, Damon, T-Mac. Everyone talks about Vince and McGrady and that, what, you know, that could have been. But when you just look at that core, Camby, Stoudemire, McGrady, then add in Vince, I mean, that's one of the great all-time what ifs, is it not?
Yeah, we were so far ahead of our time in terms of changing the game and how we wanted the game played. When John and I sat down and he asked me, how do I envision the game being played? Mm-hmm. I said, we can't play the same style that the rest of the league is playing now, because they're 20 years ahead of us. So our idea was to change the game, and I wanted to eliminate the power forward position in basketball. And we drafted that way. So when you look at Damon Stoudemire, you look at Tracy McGrady, you look at Doug Christie, mm-hmm. Vince Carter, and Marcus Camby, and you put those five players out on the floor today, they all fit today's game. But when we were doing it 20 years ago, everyone was saying, we needed a center, we needed a power forward, we needed this. But we were slowly implementing our style and changing the game. And in our scouting meetings, I called it the Raptor 2. And what I wanted the Raptor 2 to be is a power forward, size-wise and length, that could step out and shoot threes. Huh. And if you remember and you go back to and you look at our team, our first experiment was with Carlos Rogers,
yes,
who was 6'11", stepping out, shooting three-point shots.
Yeah, he was a big part of that first year.
And that's the evolution of the game, and we were a big part of that evolution.
Yeah, that's really interesting to hear. I mean, that's definitely where the league has gone. You know, if you're going to be a big man, you got to stretch the floor. You know, my last question for you, Isaiah, you know.
But we were too far ahead of our time, though.
Yeah, like almost like 20, like two decades ahead of your time.
Yeah, we were too far ahead. But now the game has caught up to the way we were thinking.
It certainly has. And I hope everyone kind of goes out and watches those old the inaugural season and kind of gets to see that play out, because, you know, I never really made that connection before, but it's pretty interesting stuff. Isaiah, I really appreciate you taking the time here today. You know, everyone listening, you can catch Isaiah on Open Court, you mentioned, on NBA TV. Isaiah, really, really thank you for doing this, man. All the best, okay?
Yeah, it was really fun chatting with you, man. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I
appreciate it.
Okay, thanks again to Isaiah Thomas. I mean, that was awesome. Hope we can get him back on the show again.
I would love to just talk to Isaiah Thomas like off air for like an hour.
Dude, we barely scratched the surface.
I know, there's so many things that you can ask this guy and talk to him, but we didn't even ask about the Pistons, which is kind of a...
I just don't think... Wanna why? Because who cares about the Pistons right now?
Me, I care about all the teams. I like the NBA.
One thing, though,
listening
to him talk about those kind of late 90s Raptors teams, early 2000s, and mentioning that... his goal was to, you know, get rid of the power forward and how the power forward spot was meaningless. That's really interesting. But also, Antonio Davis is somewhere sitting at home listening to this and just shitting a brick at the fact that, you know, he wasn't considered a big part of that team because he was a all-star cornerstone of that era Raptors.
Not to mention, after he was gone, they went out and got Charles Oakley, who's literally the definition of power forward.
But a lot of cool stuff there. I know just during the break real quick, you were talking about Isaiah calling out the lack of originality in the NBA. And for the most part, I'm with him, but there are some exceptions that we probably didn't get to.
Okay, so I don't know. Okay, like, I don't want to rip into the old players, but I just think that this whole, like, the whole narrative of the back in my day, everything was better is like, okay, great. Like, basketball in the 80s was fantastic. Basketball in the 90s was fantastic. I thought that there was, like, a little bit of a dip in the 2000s, even though we had Kobe and Shaq and the Spurs. Pistons, great. I just think that you look at this year's, like, you look at NBA right now and you talk about original players. Like, we're seeing big men who can shoot the ball like never before.
But, you know, I don't think that's what he was talking about. Like, I don't think he was just talking about guys who have original skill sets. I think he's talking about, like, guys who have original moves and the way they approach the game.
So,
like,
even when...
the way they attack the basket is a way that no one's done it before. Or the way your crossover is a new kind of crossover, like a sham god kind of thing that we just haven't seen before. I think that's what he means by original.
So how many guys have handled the ball like Jamal Crawford has?
So there's a great example. But, Jamal Crawford's a good one.
But I'm just saying that, like, you look at this stuff, and the other one, even he said there's only one original player. He says Kevin Durant, and then a minute later, he's like, oh, wait, right, there's Russell Westbrook.
And there's one other one he left out there. Anthony Davis. When have we ever seen
that's
that?
That's what I mean. There's no comp for Anthony Davis. Like, there's just...
But even then, Davis is a guy who might be just doing... Like, you know, he mentioned with LeBron, he might be doing, like, pieces of a lot of other players that combine.
But that's
Anthony
an original
Davis.
Thing to me. That's the postmodern thing that I was trying to touch on, which is that, like, yes, like...
But listen, man.
Like, people are going to... It's like the dunk contest, right? It's like, yes, like, it's tough to emulate new things. Like, everybody's done it and been
but
there
when
before.
Every
but
move,
if you can put, like, your own style on it, it's cool.
The movie example you brought up was fascinating, but because every movie, like, when you come up with movies and they're just, like... prequels or sequels or remakes or
no, I wasn't meaning that. I was meaning more like
script.
Tarantino. Like, they're like, where it's like, these premises have been done before loosely. You're putting your own spin on it. Like, there's,
taking on a genre.
Yeah, like think about it, a rom-com. Like that, no one's, you know what's going to happen in a romantic comedy, right? You know what's going to happen in an action movie.
Yeah, but are they going to get together at the end?
Will she be able to overlook that one flaw that he hid from her? Like, I just don't know.
But yeah, I mean,
what's your favorite rom-com? Mine's 10 Things I Hate About You.
It's the best movie ever. Nobody saw it. It came out like 2 years ago. It's called They Came Together.
Okay, yeah. No, I have no idea.
Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler. It's the best. It's so funny. David Wayne, the guy who did Wet Hot American Summer.
Yeah, that's a good one.
No, but Annie Hall, that's where it's at.
Okay, great. Okay, now that we got that on the way back to the basketball stuff. The really cool thing, though, was the originating the four. Like I said, it was really cool to hear Isaiah Thomas talk about those Raptors teams and just hear that kind of stuff. And again, we'll try to have to get him. We'll have to try.
So let's put a nice little bow on this Eastern Conference preview. What is your Eastern Conference finals? Is it a repeat of last year? I hope not. It's kind of boring.
That is boring. You know what I'm going to do? LeBron, he has to go back to Miami.
Oh, I love that. Cavs, Heat.
Yeah.
Let's do it. I mean, there's a lot has to go right for Miami for that to happen, but let's
Justice Winslow wins Rookie of the Year like Donovan Bennett predicts. And he's just shuts
Rosser,
down.
Evan Rosser projects.
Oh, was that Rosser? Yeah, sorry. Evan Rosser projects that Justice Winslow just takes a leap and he's the LeBron stopper. He's what Patrick Patters or
if
not.
If it's Heat against Cavs, I want to stay away
crazy
from the
ratings.
Internet.
It's gonna be crazy
the hot
ratings.
Takes are going to be cringe.
The Miami Heat hot takes?
Plentiful. Yeah. The Heat takes. Okay, I think we're done here. I think this is a sign.
I think that's good.
Okay, so listen, thanks for listening, everybody. Remember, you can catch us on iTunes and on sportsnet.ca every Tuesday. If you're on iTunes, hit that subscribe button because we would appreciate it. Also, leave some comments. And
that's a good reason. That's like a threat. Like,
and tell your friends.
Please do it. You know why? Why? Because we'd appreciate it as well.
Yeah, that's right. We're not messing around. So yeah, do that and tell your friends. Listen to the show. Hey, if you are in the city of Toronto, make sure you get yourself to Real Sports next Thursday because we are going to be doing a live episode of Free Association as part of Hoop Talks. It's going to be a really fun night. I don't know. Google it. You'll find more information on that. Okay, this has been cool. Thanks to Isaiah Thomas. Thanks, JD. Thanks to Tyler Ennis. You're listening to Free Association, and now you're not.
This is about all of us. I love you, people.